My name is Lori. I'm from Beverly, Massachusetts. I came in around the age of 34, 35, and I'm 60 now. So I let people do the math because I'm lousy at math. And I'm very grateful to stand here abstinent today and to be willing to share a story, which is mine. And I came in at 33, 34 because, quite frankly, my back was on fire. My backside was on fire. I had heard about OA at a PTO bake sale, and I have no idea what I said to the woman beside me, who was actually larger than myself, but she told me about Overeaters Anonymous, and I'm sure what I said to her was something like, I want to eat everything on this table. And she told me about Overeaters Anonymous, and she told me that there was a meeting in Beverly. The last time I heard about OA was through Dear Abby, and she was out in California. And I thought, I'm not going to California. So that was the end of OA for me at that time. And I did not jump right into OA when I heard about it because my life was far too busy. And I had tried several diet programs, which included recipes and concoctions, and I knew that I did not have the time to go back into that again. Also, I heard that there was something spiritual about this program. I had my own religion, and I didn't want that fooled around with. So I thought, okay, very good reasons not to enter in here. But a couple of months passed, and what little she told me about OA was something about not eating sugar, not eating certain foods. And I was somebody, they say, don't rewrite the big book until you've read it or tried to live it. Well, I tried to do it without ever even opening the book or walking through the doors. I just took what little bit she said, and I figured, well, I'll try limiting the sugar, and then I'll work on the carbs and the grains or whatever she said to me at the time. And at that time, I think we could eat whole wheat but not white flour. And I figured, I'll just try this. I'll do this sanely, which is a joke if you've got this disease. I'll do this sanely, and I'll just let go of sugar first and then just gradually work my way into the rest of it. And because I am a person who does not have the power to control what's on her plate or what goes into her mouth, that did not work out very well. I actually did improve. I ate less sugar, and I found out that my bread and potato increased. My intake of those things increased, but I thought, that's okay, I'm not focusing on those. I'm focusing just on sugar. But I do remember vividly, even during that period of time, that I made a particular dessert, which was my favorite, not the other four members of my family's favorite. And my technique for controlling my food, or maybe not controlling my food, was I would clear off the whole table except the dessert. And I was a sliverer and a teaspooner. I was the type who never meant to eat it all, and nobody was ever more shocked than myself that it was gone or almost gone. I never ate it all because nice people don't eat it all. I was nice. I would always leave something. It might be one cookie for my husband who ate his dessert before he went to bed, or I would tunnel my way through the half gallon, but he'd have all the edges to eat. I mean, it was like, you know, I would never eat it all. I mean, I really tried to control it. One of the other methods I used was to put the sugar substance in a dish with a lid in a cabinet with a door that was hard to open and close. And again, it's like it just didn't work. I always ate it right down to the last five pieces. But good people don't eat it all, so I wouldn't eat the last five pieces. So I was still a nice person, even though I was totally out of control with my food. And I tried to use all the rationales that I had heard society give me for controlling it. Like one of the things that happened in that period of time was that I had tried to adopt OA without ever coming into it, was that I was throwing a birthday party for my sister. It was in February, which in bleak weather in New England, that's like one of my most difficult times of year. And I had been trying to do this little thing with OA before she arrived, and I'm the type that made everything homemade. That was my keynote to fame, was that everything was from scratch in my house. Nothing came out of a box. And cooking was also my title, my honor title. That's how I got strokes from people. And it was huge to walk in here and to let go of that. I'll tell you, not just the food, but the thing that made me feel good beyond eating it made me feel good, beyond cooking it and getting accolades for it. That all had to, like, be let go of. The thing is I was just going to eat enough sugar to get myself adrenalized so that I could tackle the house and the cooking so that I could have this party for my sister. And I did that. I remember eating the substance, which I put in the dish behind the door, which is hard to open and close to control it, ate it right down to the last few pieces, stood in my kitchen with that racy feeling going up and down my arms, thinking, okay, this is what I wanted, this is what I needed to get this job done. Having the party, telling myself that I'm sitting at the table, that I don't need to eat the dessert because, like, the show is as good as it's going to get and there's nothing more I can do about it, so just let it go. But I would still be eating. I couldn't stop. The rationales that I heard society tell me didn't stop me from shoving it in my mouth. And that was the point. That was the jumping off point at which I called the person in OA and asked them to get me to a meeting. And she said, are you sure? And I was like, just get me there. And I think that was like on a Monday, and the meeting was on a Thursday. And that was the first meeting that I walked into. And I definitely did not understand what was going on in that room. When I left there with a status packet. There was probably a room full of 10 people, and at break, somebody asked me if I needed a sponsor, like I wasn't recognizable, you know, the new chick on the block who didn't know from Adam. And I said yes, and like a big mother hen, she lifted up her wing and scooped me underneath it. And I left there with a status packet and something that I had never heard before, any place I had gone. And they said at that meeting that this was a disease. I had never heard that my problem referred to as a disease before. That stuck in my brain in a way that nothing else did. I didn't know what it meant, but it stuck in my brain. And I called in my food the next day, which I thought was the weirdest thing on the face of the earth. And I was really afraid that my husband or kids might hear me do this wacko thing. And the only reason I stuck to the food plan that day was that I was an honest person, and if I said I was going to do something, I would do it. And so I ate it. I think I was at that point preparing for a blue and gold Boy Scouts banquet, and I had no idea how I was going to cook the fish for supper and get ready for the banquet too, but I couldn't call that woman back and tell her I wasn't going to do it. That's all I knew. I didn't know who she was, and I had her number, and I wasn't going to call her back and say I couldn't do this, so by God, I did it. And my recovery or my journey in this program started. It was a miracle because I absolutely could not eat or stick to any sort of a food plan for 24 hours. And I loved it when I went into a meeting one night and this guy said that there was a psychology that he had heard out in the world that once you did something, you knew you could do it again. If I had done a diet successfully, in other words, I should be able to repeat that diet and do it successfully again. And I had done something similar. It was a diet workshop type of diet. And I had done that successfully. I had gotten down to a weight I had never been at before. And I had made up all the concoctions, met with an unauthorized group of diet workshop, I had lost weight, gotten to the size I had never been before, actually bought myself several outfits. Somebody was a wholesaler, and they were selling their line of samples, and a friend knew of them, and we all went and bought clothes. I now had all these new outfits to wear, and I had every reason to stay abstinent. The group broke up in the spring, and they all went there off to vacation. I was home, not going any place for vacation, and trying to now maintain these food plans on my own. And I found it very weird. It was actually done with parents from my third child's nursery school group. And I remember tying my daughter's shoes on in the kitchen and crawling over to the kitchen cabinet and getting out a substance and just spooning it into my mouth and thinking, why am I doing this? Like, this isn't really my favorite food. And I found out later by reading labels that that substance has sugar in it. So my denial was that it was a healthy substance but loaded with sugar, and I was spooning it in just because I needed something. My next move to try to prevent myself from gaining weight was to get rid of all my fat clothes. And I had actually saved one pair of my favorite kind of burnt orange corduroy slacks. And that was when my last child, my three children, went up to school together. And I think that empty feeling hit me inside when I saw the three of them going up to school and I was going to be home now. And the emptiness was there. And there must have been this powerful urge to go to the cabinets, and instead I went upstairs, brought my pants out, pulled them out, and thought, I'll get rid of these, and I won't be able to eat if I get rid of them because I will have nothing to wear. Well, so much for that theory. So, you know, here I am, somebody that, you know, is definitely powerless over food, although I have to say it took me the first 4 years of being in OA to surrender to the fact that I cannot control food and that I am an addict. And I really struggled. I never put all my weight back on. I stayed in a slim body after the first 6 months in program. I never gained back more than 5 pounds. My top weight, I can't actually tell you my top weight. It was around... it was something over 168 pounds. When I came into OA, I asked my sponsor if I, please don't have me weigh. I did not want to know the truth. I really could not face it, the story of my life. And I asked it. So at that point, I weighed 168 and I binged the weekend or whatever. And before I went in and after that. So, and today I weigh in the area of 112. Again, you do the math. So the saving grace in this program is that there are 12 steps in this program, and there is not just, actually, there's not, step one encompasses more than I ever realized. I always thought it was the don't eat step or the abstinence step, but it's actually, the first step says, I'm powerless over food and my life is unmanageable. I did not get the two parts. For a long, long time in this program, it was totally about food for me. And in fact, when I brought home the starter's packet, there were 12, I don't know how many pamphlets were in there, maybe 8, maybe more. On the back of each one of those pamphlets was the 12 steps, beyond my comprehension why they were there. The only thing I comprehended was the food part. And to be honest with you, not even that. Because if you asked me why I came in here and what my problem was, I would have said my weight. Now, I know a sane person who has a well-thinking brain would connect food and weight have something to do with one another. But really, my problem and what was driving me crazy was my body size. I didn't know how big food had a part to play in that until I was told what I had to do in here. And I actually thought it was totally preposterous. And it is. It truly is totally preposterous if I don't get down on my knees in the morning, if I don't ask God for help. I actually felt so good once I started to do this program that I didn't take time to get down on my knees. I didn't take time to read any literature. I started bouncing out of bed, and I was actually wanted to go do the laundry. But then I realized that I needed to back up because that wasn't going to get me anywhere, except I'm the type that could race yourself right into a wall and off a cliff. So it's like I needed to back up and slow down, and I needed to get down on my knees. I've read the 24-hour book. That's what was recommended to me. It's not OA recommended literature. It's only telling you what I was given when I came in here. That's what I was given to read in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what was available to me at the time. That's what I was told to read, and that's what I have read. That's my literature. Those are my Bibles. And thank God for it, because once the food was down, I began to see, I didn't see life as it really was, because I was too drugged and I really didn't know the mental part of this disease. In fact, I objected to the mental insanity of it. And I always get a little stop in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because they seem to have realized that their minds were ill. And then they had to come to terms with their body, their physical allergy. My physical problem was staring me in the mirror, so it was hard for me to deny my physical illness. My mental and spiritual illness, I would fight you to the death about. I wasn't the most brightest person in the face of the world, but I wasn't mentally ill, and I liked going to church, so what's the problem? And as they say, more will be revealed. More has been revealed to me. I have been committed to AWOLs for years, and that's certainly what kept me alive and kept my program going. During the years that I've been in program, I walked through my mother-in-law dying of bone cancer. I just had my toes in Overeaters Anonymous at that time, and I could not understand why God would allow somebody to stay alive just to suffer. That was my interpretation of her condition. And I did not keep an abstinent program at that time. Since then, I've had the privilege and honor of walking through the death of my husband and years of physical illness. And by the grace of God and sponsors and teachers in this program, I've had the gift of being able to walk through it abstinently. I remember going into a meeting once. My husband was hospitalized during the years. He was actually ill since the day I walked through this program. His illness progressed. He died in 2004. But there was a time when he was hospitalized in Boston, and I was running, my kids were still in high school at that time, and I was running in and out of Boston, I was running to meetings, I was running with kids, and I can remember looking at my sponsor and saying to her, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? I just can't keep all these balls in the air. And she looked me straight in the eye, and she said, just remember, your disease is just as deadly as his. And that is the truth. His took him out slowly. Mine is very insidious and will take me out just as slowly, but it'll take me down and take me out. That's the nature of the disease. That's what I've come to find. Whether I overeat, I undereat, ride into a bridge abutment, or take a gun to my head, it doesn't matter. The ultimate, final goal of my disease is to take me out. And what this program is about is about life and freedom. And that's what I have come to know, a freedom. When I told somebody that I was going to weigh and measure my food, I was going to commit to meetings, I was going to commit to phone calls, I was going to commit to doing service, she looked at me and she said to me, isn't that drastic? And this was after I had been around here the 4 years. And I had this little vision come in front of my face, and it was like a bird that had been let out of a cage. And that's what's happened to me. But there's 12 steps that I have to work at on a daily basis. I've come face to face, and there is a solution in the big book. It talks about the problem rests in my mind. Who knew? I thought it was a physical problem. The problem rests in my mind, because it is my mind that tells me that the first bite is okay. And from there, I'm a lost cookie. But it's more than that. It also tells me that resentment is okay. It also tells me that justified jealousy, justified resentment is all right. And if I harbor those things will lead me back to the first bite just as much as a food thought. And that's what I have to know, that there are three parts to this disease, and I have to address those three parts on a daily basis. The way I begin my day is I get down on my knees. I say the third step prayer. I am participating in a religion. I practice a religious prayer. I read my big book. I take 30 minutes of quiet time. I get up from there and I go into either picking up the phone and phoning my sponsor. On a daily basis, I receive calls from sponsees. I also call people on a daily basis that, because it's a part of service, and it doesn't matter whether somebody's been in a long time or been in a short time, is in withdrawal or is practicing working the 12 steps in our lives. There isn't anybody that doesn't need the support and fellowship of this program if you're clean and showing up and living life. And I have to say, I'm grateful to be alive today. I don't want to hurt myself. I don't want to kill myself today. When I fail to live up to my expectations or other people fail to live up to my expectations, I don't need to put a drug in my mouth today. The solution is in the big book, and it's there for anybody who wants it. Thank you.